Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
And we're back. This is 840 interview podcast, 840 of you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, the radio podcast that helps you take control of your genes so you can live at the top of your curve. The book we have and the person we have to interview is interesting in that I had never really heard of this before I got to talk to Dr. Salinas or read Joelle Salinas's book called Mirror Touch, M-I-R-R-O-R, Touch. I'm going to let him describe what it is, but I'm reminded of a story of my CEO, the CEO of the Cleveland Clinic, Dr. Cosgrove. Dr. Cosgrove was about 8 years ago, 9 years ago, maybe 10 years ago now, was teaching a class at Harvard Business School relating to the business of the Cleveland Clinic and why it was so successful, both as a clinical entity, that is, in helping people, and as a business. And one of the students in the business class, he was only there for one guest appearance. She stood up, and she was a freshman in the Harvard Business School, and she said, Dr. Cosgrove, do you teach empathy at the Cleveland Clinic? I hear your outcomes are much better than, for example, the Mayo Clinic for the thing my mother needs, mitral valve replacement, but I'm still sending my mother to the Mayo Clinic because they're empathetic. And Dr. Cosgrove says, first of all, he had to Google the word empathy, it literally, after he learned what it was, it literally changed what we do at the Cleveland Clinic, as he had everyone at the clinic start taking empathy training. So that is one person can literally, a student literally changed the practices at the Cleveland Clinic. This book is really about empathy. So Joel Salinas, tell me what Mirror Touch is about and why you're so empathetic.
Well, thank you for having me. So mirror touch or mirror touch synesthesia, essentially what it means is that for me, if someone has a headache, I feel it. If they're gasping for air, I literally physically feel it in my own body.
If you walk by a store or if you go into a McDonald's, do you feel that you're eating the hamburger or tasting the hamburger? What degree is this? Is it just pain or is it everything?
It's every physical sensation. So if I were to see somebody eating a hamburger in front of me, I would feel the sensation of holding a hamburger in my hand and my kind of jaw moving up and down and the sensation of my throat moving down as they swallow. It's essentially whatever information comes through my eyes and gets translated to the vision parts of my brain get translated then into the sensation of touch as if it were occurring on my own body, and that includes emotions as well.
So one of the things you must understand, and you and I got introduced a number of years ago by a classmate of mine from college who is a physician, Marty Samuels, at the Brigham and Women's. In fact, he was chair of neurology at that time, I think, that we got introduced. So you're a trained, Harvard-trained neurologist. So you must learn a lot about pain when you see people suffer.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, for me, I think the mirror touch experience not only drew me into medicine, but it helped shape me as a physician. In kind of taking part in some of the suffering and pain of patients, the patients were able to feel a little less alone, and that's a lot in medicine. And then,
so in addition to them feeling less alone, do you think
that's
this,
right.
and I'm asking you questions I may know the answer to since I read some of the book. I didn't get a chance to read the whole book, but you think it made you a better physician?
I mean, I think so. It's hard for me to know for certain because it's it's a part of who I am. It's a part of how I perceive the world. It'd be hard for me to imagine what my life would have been like without it. But because of it, I do find some clinical cues in patients and also some emotional cues in patients. So as an example of a clinical cue, at one point I was consulted in the hospital to see a young woman with cerebral palsy. And because of her cerebral palsy, she couldn't speak. And the reason they consulted me was because one day in the hospital, she had woken up and was very combative and agitated. And what they were hoping that me as a neurologist would come and do is give recommendations on a medication that would calm her. But when I saw her, I couldn't shake the feeling in my own body of a mirrored rising of my chest that was faster than my own breath, but also kind of the mirrored activation of what we call the accessory muscles of respiration. So those are just shoulder muscles kind of along the neck and the shoulders that we use to help us take in deeper breaths. And because of that experience, because of those feelings, I ended up recommending a test that I wouldn't have normally recommended, and we ended up finding blood clots in her lungs.
Now, that's a specific example of you having a symptom and being able to evaluate or go through a differential diagnosis, go through a list of potential things that might be causing that use of those, what we call the, as you said, the accessory muscles of respiration. So that's but it would seem to me this would happen throughout. That is, I almost think of it as, and I don't get that impression from the book, that you're totally distracted, because it must be that there, you look at things, there must be 20 people you see in the main corridor when you go in the hospital each time you go in or went in, and that when you go to you're a private practitioner now, when you go to a waiting room or you go to a area, even when you go to a basketball game, you must see tons of people, and how do you focus on one?
Yeah, the experience can be more or less vivid depending on a few parameters that really tie to the functioning of the brain. One of them is how new the experience is, how surprising the experience is another part of it, and then how relatable the experience is to my own experience. So, for example, if I've had that experience in the past, then it can be even more vivid. And sometimes it gets to the point where it almost is almost like a hallucination. But I'm still able to tell the difference between what's reality and what's not, because I have kind of these veto messages coming up from the nerves in my skin that tell me that I'm not physically being touched. You can imagine early on in my clinical training, everything I was seeing was very new, and it was very overwhelming as I started. And part of my process of kind of getting past that was actually exposing myself to more, to seeing as many cases as I could, trying as many procedures as I could, getting through that initial kind of distress and that initial extremely vivid experience so that way the next time I'd be able to manage it a little bit better. In the case of a medical emergency, for example, where kind of being extremely empathetic may not be as helpful, where you want to act quickly and move through an algorithm, in those situations, I've learned to really focus on inanimate objects, things that don't look like they have emotion, things that don't look like faces, and that may be like a doorknob or a sleeve or a collar. And that helps to kind of move out of that other person's experience and get kind of to kind of recenter myself. And sometimes it's even just really focusing on my own body, kind of putting my attention in the feeling, for example, of my toes in my socks or the tongue in my mouth, whatever it takes to kind of ground myself back in myself.
Well, so one of the things that's interesting here is I did not know about this condition. How common is what you call mirror touch, being able to feel what someone else is feeling when they're feeling it when you look at them?
Yeah, so it's interesting in that the system that's involved, the mirror touch system in the brain, is something that we all have. So when we see somebody else being touched, our brain is constantly kind of processing that information through the touch parts of our brain, creating these mental simulations of what we're seeing. And for the most part, that process is unconscious. But from time to time, if that activity increases enough, it'll cross that threshold into conscious perception. So as an example, if you were watching a football game and somebody got just tackled, or you watch somebody fall and hit their face, that cringe that everybody has, that's that same mirror touch system suddenly kind of raising its activity. But in two out of about 100 people with mirror touch synesthesia, the activity of the system is conscious. It's very high all the time. And what we see, at least from the cognitive neuroscience research, is these parts of the brain that are responsible for this mirror touch system are not only larger, but they're more active. And the other half of it, which I think is interesting, is that the parts of our brain that are responsible for helping us tell the difference between our own body and the body of other people, in mirror touch synesthetes, those areas are smaller and less active. So this mirror touch system is just very, very active all the time.
So what you're saying is we all have some empathetic mirror neuron. Is this different from the mirror neurons that when someone else yawns, you yawn? Or is it
It's the same system. It's the same system. The terminology mirror neuron and mirror touch are interchangeable for the most part. But you're exactly right. It's that same system that was discovered several years ago in a lab in Italy, where they were studying motor planning in monkeys, where they had electrodes around these areas of their brain, and they noticed that the areas of the brain that activated when the monkey would feed itself were also activated just from the monkey watching somebody feed themselves, somebody else.
And so this is that mirror neuron system that we all have. Now I'm beginning to understand it a little bit. Mm-hmm. And the... tell me about, and I don't know, what type of patient do you find most joy in dealing with because of this?
It's an interesting question. You know, for me as a physician, I get the most joy when I'm able to feel like I've really connected with a patient and help them. So that could be any number of diseases or conditions, but I can give you an example. I had one patient who had come into the hospital and just dodged a bullet with a potential stroke. He almost had a stroke in what we call the top of the basilar artery. So it's this artery that runs along the brainstem that's very important for all of our vital functions in our body. And if you have a stroke there, you develop what's called locked-in syndrome, where you can't move anything except your eyes up and down. And so he was very, very lucky. When I saw him in the clinic afterwards, you know, he had changed his lifestyle. He had been exercising every day. He had changed his diet. All of his numbers looked pristine. And so I was congratulating him on this. And one thing that really caught my attention was that the mirrored sensations in my own body of joy didn't seem like the type of joy that I felt in other people. It felt forced. And so I took that opportunity to press him on it, on how he was doing, and he just began to sob. He had actually been very depressed and anxious, just terrified that he was going to have another stroke. As he described it, he was a dead man walking. And because of that, we had a chance to have a more earnest conversation about how he was doing. We put together a plan, and eventually his quality of life improved. And I felt that that sort of information, that sort of a connection with the patient doesn't come from blood tests, doesn't come from an MRI, doesn't even come from the standard physical exam. It comes from kind of this very rich experience of empathy.
And now one of the things that you describe in the book that was fascinating to me is romantic relationships for someone who's got a heightened sense of mirror touch. And it's a fascinating area in the book, so tell us about it.
Yeah, so I think I would call it the flip side of mirror touch is kind of empathizing too much, or essentially reflecting, putting yourself too much in the position of the other person. So in romantic relationships, as you can imagine, you're around someone for a great deal of time, and you're so much more willing to kind of put yourself in the position of the other person. And for me, it almost felt like my mental body map, because it was spending so much time in the position of the other, the other became essentially an extension of that mental body map. So it became harder and harder to tell the difference where I ended and the other person began. And in the case where you need to, where you need to be able to kind of remember your own feelings and your own needs, it can be quite difficult. And kind of one of the things that I talk about in the book is the process of ending of a relationship, which a lot of people I'm sure can relate with, is very difficult. And for me, it was almost physically painful, kind of almost like amputating kind of a part of this mental body map to actually get through that.
And you're feeling the other person's pain as you're ending that relationship.
That's right. You know, if I were to cause anyone distress, the distress would be reflected in my own body. So it's almost like I'm essentially inflicting harm upon myself in the same process. So as you can imagine, it can be just very, very distressing for everyone. But in particular, it's doubly felt for the married to Tennessee.
So we should tell people we're talking to Dr. Joel Salinas, Salinas. It's Joel Salinas, JoelSalinas.com is the website. And the book is called Mirror Touch. Let me ask you the other converse of a relationship, the euphoria of finding someone. What do you do if that, first of all, how common is that? And the degree of this, the intensity which with you feel this mirror touch, how many people have as much intensity with it as we think you do, or as you expressed in the book?
So if you were to do a survey of about the mirror touch experiences in the general population, you'd find out that about 10 in 100 people would identify with enough of them to suggest that they may have mirror touch synesthesia. But then if you bring them into a lab setting and you do experimental tests, that are objective experimental tests that are used to tell the difference between mirror touch synesthetes and non-synesthetes, you'd find that number goes down to about 2 in 100 people. So it ends up being
so roughly 2% or 2 in 100 have the synesthesia component to mirror touch.
That's right. But one thing that's interesting is because this kind of hard wiring is in everybody. One thing that we know about the research is that that activity in this mirror neuron system is greatest when you can relate a lot with the other person. So, for example, if you were to see an image of yourself being touched or being hurt, that activity would be much, much greater than if you were to see somebody who was a family or a friend who was getting touched or being hurt. And that activity is the least when you're seeing somebody who you consider to be a stranger or someone who's foreign from you that you just can't relate with at all.
We've been talking with Dr. Joel Salinas. The book is Mirror Touch, fascinating exploration of something I didn't know existed to this degree. If there's a take-home message from this, Joel, and what's the take-home message that we give to the 98%+ of us who don't have this?
Well, my hope with this book is that people will not only learn more about mirror touch synesthesia and how the brain works, but also learn more about how to develop their own heightened, more engaged sense of empathy. I mean, could you imagine how different the world would be if we didn't just think about what it's like to be in other people's shoes, but also feel what it's like to be in other people's shoes, to then reason through that experience and respond from a truer, more enduring place of compassion and kindness.
And that's what we try and teach all of our employees, all of our caregivers at the Cleveland Clinic. And I think it's a very, very valuable thing to think about empathy. Thanks very much. You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual radio show and podcast on RadioMD.com and on iHeart, as well as a bunch of others. You can download us every Tuesday morning at 7 a.m. We release a new issue with the latest news, medical news of the week, as well as with great interviews and usually with great book authors like Joel Salinas, Mirror Touch. Thanks very much for great engineering, Sonar, and you for listening. We'll be back next week with a new edition. And make sure, if you haven't heard Andy Weil last 2 weeks ago, or if you will, if you haven't heard The Scared Selfless last week by Dr. Michelle Stevens, go and listen to those. Those are really sensational information that all of us can use. And by the way, while you're thinking about it, go back and listen to Gene Chatsky on Ageproof. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening.